Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the host of this podcast and the founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement. Very quickly today, I would like to give a viewer discretion as advised due to the nature of topics that we will be discussing. Today, I am joined by one of the most beautiful human beings on social media, one of the most positive human beings, Julia. Welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. Walk us through. Or introduce yourself and then walk us through, starting with your journey and where you are now, the work that you do and how you remain positive in a world that tries to silence marginalized voices.
Wow, definitely loaded, and I appreciate the very warm welcome, Zach. Like you said, how do we stay positive in a very, very interesting world that we're living in? But I appreciate the introduction. My name is Julia, and I live in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm a full-time content creator out here in the valley, and I do a lot of content that circles around body inclusion, collective liberation, and just overall loving yourself and loving the skin that you're in. And I like to incorporate a lot of different things when it comes to my very, multi-dimensional personality, as much as any of us, are multi-dimensional and have a wide variety of interests. One of the things that I love to really talk about and incorporate in whatever art I'm creating, whether it be music, dancing, video creation, I like to incorporate a environment where people can feel comfortable to be themselves as themselves, and to know that this is a space that we can grow, develop, and learn together. And I think honestly, that's one of the big things that's helped me tremendously in surviving this wild, tragically beautiful world that we live in, is finding ways to connect with not only myself, but with the people around me, and just learning to embrace and love ourselves in a world that's constantly trying to make sure that's something that we don't do. I think embracing one's individuality and natural beauty is such a revolutionary thing, especially against these systems of oppression that's constantly trying to get us to change and to assimilate. And it's always into something lesser than what we naturally are. And yeah, I would say those are some things, one that I do with my platform, and two ways that I'm surviving in this world that we're in. So. But I'm very interested.
And you have literally hundreds of thousands of followers. Did you realize that? Like, you literally have hundreds of thousands of followers because if you take your TikTok and your Instagram and like your other social media, like you have hundreds of thousands of followers that are hearing your voice, hearing your story, and seeing, who Julia is. And you're giving hope to so many people, including myself. And you were one of my biggest inspirations. I legitimately hope that you understand that. And whenever you agreed to come on this podcast, I was like, oh shit, it's about to get real. It's about to get real, like, because you're one of the realest content creators because you told exactly how it is and you don't mince any words, you don't mince any bones about it. Because, like you said, in a society that tries to oppress and silence the most marginalized voices, we all rise from the ashes because we have stories to tell. We have these lived experiences, and we're not going to stay silent. That is something that I admire about you, something that I deeply have the utmost respect about. I know you didn't come on this podcast thinking, oh, Zachary's going to praise me. Yes, I'm absolutely going to praise you because you deserve it. You absolutely deserve it. Breaking through these glass ceilings, breaking through these barriers of oppression. And systematic oppression, systematic racism runs very deep. It runs very, very deep and has a lot of roots, unfortunately. So the decolonization of our communities is something that we really need to hit hard on. Now, what does collective liberation look like? And what does it mean to you to bring that collective liberation? That right there is a decolonization in itself. Because liberation has a lot of fronts. It has a lot of moving pieces that go into it. What is it to you? What is the main message behind the collective liberation?
Wow. Well, thank you so much for that beautiful, all those sweet words that you said. One, that's so validating and just encouraging to, the work that we do, because you also know as a content creator how difficult it can be, especially when we are sharing such big stories, such personal and real life situations. And unfortunately, the algorithm, the powers that be, don't want us to share, whether it be our size, the color of our skin, our gender, sexuality, religion, whatever it may be, anything that just goes outside of that social construct. It's very hard to get our messaging out there. So getting that type of encouragement and validation, especially from you and the work that you do with Rise Above Justice Movement, it's absolutely incredible. So I appreciate that. And we both do a similar thing where we are both on this path of individual collective individual liberation, but also working with others for this collective liberation. For me, collective liberation is everything that we have endured as people who are oppressed, whether it be, our origin of country, whether it be, sexuality, genders, everything. But people who are in oppressed groups, like us, I believe that collective liberation is coming together and knowing that all of us deal with the same type of oppressive system. And a lot of us have the same, the common denominator of the same oppressor, which tends to be wealthy, rich, white people in power. That is something I constantly share on my social media platform as a person who is not only half white, but as a person who participated for so long, knowingly or unknowingly, in upholding this system of oppression, which is white supremacy, which is colonization, which is literally the unanimous answer to all of our questions of why are we suffering as humans in the way that we are. And I believe collective liberation is joining together with other marginalized people and voices and knowing that your freedom is just as vital as my freedom. When I help liberate and amplify your voice, I'm doing the same for me. Because I believe all oppression is connected as much as I believe a lot of our oppressors tend to be connected. So for me, that is what collective liberation means, to join together with other marginalized voices and people and to help break free from the chains of white supremacy. But for me, that's my big op, I should say. That's my oppressor right there.
Which it
But
also goes into like generational trauma, and it goes into the
mm-hmm.
ancestral trauma and learning about our
Yes.
collective histories and learning about our genealogy. And like, there's so many like things that go into that, right? And when did you start doing your platform? Like, what was that inspired you? Like, I have to say something, I have a story to share. What was that aha moment for you? Whenever you started creating content, what inspired you to get started?
Wow, I just went on a mental trip back down memory lane to when I first created my profile and my online persona, which is Julia, which is my real name, but as you see, like how my name is spelled online and on here, it's spelled JEWLIEAH. And I created that actually my last semester in Bible college. And to many people, they get very shocked once they realize they're like, wait, you were in Bible college? And I'm like, yes, this very openly confident, positive SW who's very loud and proud went to Bible college. And people even get more shocked when they find out I'm the daughter of a pastor. That was always like,
That's like one of those like, bitch, what?
yeah. People, some people don't even like believe me. They're like, you're just saying this stuff for clout. And I'm just like, And what clout am I getting?
Oh,
What am I getting out of this?
there it is.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. But yeah, I would say when I ended up leaving college back in 2018, it was after the spring semester. I ended up actually dropping out of college. And I kind of went full force into this online persona that I was creating because, I mean, growing up in within Christianity, and many people know from observing or from their own personal experience, Christianity is a place where, there's this certain box that you are in. And if you were to ever step outside of that box, it can be very catastrophic to your reputation. And it can just not really get the nicest comments and views from your fellow brothers and sisters in Christ. So when I started creating content leaving college, a lot of people, weren't really about that. They're just kind of like, why is she showing off her body? That's not very Christ-like. Why is she telling people that they can be big and beautiful? And this is 2018, Julia. And for the body positive movement, to be where it is now, I am so grateful, and I'm happy to see more and more people loving themselves and loving the body they're in, regardless of their size. But back in 2018, that was revolutionary. That was like almost like heathen-like in a sense, because growing up in Christianity, I've always been in a bigger body, and I was told in so many different ways from so many different people, leaders, family, pastors, all that jazz, that my existence being in a bigger body was a sin in itself. Being a child and learning that I am not being a good steward of my body because I'm in a bigger body, I am sinning against God. I'm one of the reasons why Christ is on that cross, because I exist in a bigger body and I'm not treating my body as the temple of the Holy Spirit as it should be. And that does a lot to any person, let alone a child who's receiving this messaging week after week after week. And it's just incredible to see how I went from someone who used to wear baggy hoodies and pants during the summers here in Arizona, where you get triple digit heat. I used to get bloody noses because I'd be wearing these big baggier clothes because I was trying to hide my bigger body. I thought if I wore this, triple XL letter sweater, no one can tell that I'm fat. I'm gonna tell you, everyone knew I was fat. It didn't matter what I was wearing. Everyone knew that I was bigger. But in my mind, because of that shame that was constantly being perpetuated to me through these systems and these powers and these people who I'm supposed to be looking up for guidance and to feel comfortable and feel loved, are telling me the way that I look is just, it's not up to par for what God wants. And yeah, and that was very devastating for a person. So I created my social media profile and I started to show pictures of me more. It was just like me, even on my college campus at the time when I first started it. And I'm like wearing leggings, I'm wearing my little backpack going to school. And people were so caught off guard by that because how dare a person who looks like me, who weighs as much as me, who has my body type, ever feel beautiful and confident? And fast forward now, 7 years later, 2025, I am able to do this and advocate for more inclusion when it comes to bigger bodies, and get paid and to fully live in my authenticity. Like your encouragement, Zach, that meant so much because I want all people, regardless of their size, to see my content and feel like they are enough, to feel like they are more than just their body. And that just contradicts so much of what society has continually perpetuated to people in marginalized bodies, that we aren't good enough. In order to be good enough, we must change, we must assimilate, we must shrink ourselves to be more palatable. And I feel that coincides a lot with, these oppressive systems, especially the way that our current administration has been going. We are living in such a time where if you go outside of this box of beauty, of success, of whatever, you will not only be looked to as less, but now you can even be punished for speaking up about the box that we're trying to put you in. It's very interesting times, and voices like yours, like mine, and many, many others who are doing the work, it's so needed. It's a lot to create content, but through years of consistency and showing up more authentically and being able to acknowledge and take accountability. I am a person, like I've told you, I grew up in evangelical Christianity, and for many of us know with what's happening with the current administration, how intertwined both of them are, and how these certain harmful, narrow-minded views are literally causing harm to you and I and every other person on this planet, whether they know it or not. So yeah, it's been a journey to say the least. So
And what did you, and you say you went to Bible college, right?
yes.
So
So
why, you know exactly what question's getting ready to come.
now give it to me.
What drawn you or what drew you to go to Bible college? Growing up being the pastor's daughter and being outspoken against these stereotypes of like what a woman is supposed to look like, how you're supposed to act, how you're supposed to be, how you're supposed to this, how you're supposed to that. Like these, you know, those are all like society created, and it's a social construct, really. What drew you to go to Bible college?
That's a really good question. And I can always go with the very short answer that I had many people in my family who went to that college, including my mother. And it's a very small Bible college here in Phoenix, Arizona. And I had so many family members who went there, and I ended up going there. But I guess the more longer, more in-depth way is, as much as I'm a person now who speaks out and, who does believe in uplifting marginalized voices, who does believe in equality and collective liberation, the reality is I haven't always been that person. And I think that's something that a lot of us as people who have been on this deconstructing, healing journey, that's the part that's hard for a lot of people to confront. Not only have we been harmed by these systems, like I shared with you when it came to my body and my position of being, of what it is to be a woman of God and whatnot, I was also one of those people who perpetuated that same harm, that same narrow-minded view. When I was growing up, I wasn't the most studious person. Anyone who knows me be like, yeah, Julia isn't the most studious person. Always been told I'm in my own little like dream world and whatnot. And to say, they're lying wouldn't be true. I, for the most part, that is very, very true. And I'm a person who openly shares about having CPTSD, complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And being present is one of the most difficult things for people who've endured such harmful things as children through adulthood. Being present was one of the most difficult things, and I wasn't much of a studious person. So me ending up in college was kind of like, whoa, that's pretty crazy. But I ended up dropping out of high school when I was like 17. I had a full-time job. I was having a difficult time balancing the both of them both, and I dropped out of high school. And I was just kind of at this low point in my life where I was not feeling good enough. I felt like I didn't look good enough. I felt like I wasn't smart enough. I didn't think I was beautiful enough, talented enough. I was always feeling like I wasn't enough, to the point where it brought me to such a low area in my life where I actually attempted to take my own life when I was about 18 or 19 years old. And not to get too much in details, but thankfully the things that I took just caused me to pass out for hours. And I ended up waking up in a shower, and my family was there. And it was just one of those moments where they're like, you got to do something with your life. You're this sad. You're feeling not so great because you got nothing really going for you at the moment. And what happened to me growing up in Christianity, I kind of just drove even harder in Christianity after experiencing such a, devastating moment in my life. And I got my GED, and a kid you not, a month later, I was enrolled and at a Bible college. And I kind of went deep in. I already did music ministry a little bit growing up. And so I got really into it. I ended up staying at that college for a few years, and I experienced the behind the scenes in putting together church services, writing my own sermons, even writing Christian music, leading worship services, taking care of kids during Sunday school. I've worked for many churches, and I've even traveled to different states, reservations, and cities doing missionary work. That was me and my upbringing, and that was very normal for me and my upbringing. Obviously, as a person now who has deconstructed and is a lot more aware now of those things, I didn't realize how much I was participating in upholding one, white supremacy, how I was also upholding this very, how do I say this? I'm like, I don't know if these words get blurred out in these podcasts, but a very genocidal system. I mean, the harm that has been done and that I participated in, it hasn't always been, I haven't been this person that I am now. I haven't always been this person. And that was a hard thing for me to sit with. Because not only was I upholding this system that was causing and perpetuating and covering up so much harm, I was also being harmed by it. And it took something so severe happening to me personally, which pulled me out of this Bible college, which pulled me out of organized religion in general. And my last semester of college, where I, made that platform and started this online persona, it was also the semester that I was unfortunately sexually assaulted by a person I didn't really know super well. But the person who essentially set it up and quote unquote said words like, it felt like I directed and orchestrated it. She was one of my friends from this Bible college, and she set me up essentially to be sexually assaulted by this person that I didn't know. And it took something like that, that turned my whole world upside down. Because of the way I was conditioned for majority of my life, when that moment happened to me, I felt shame. I was the one who felt like I did something wrong. If I didn't do XYZ, then they wouldn't have done that. If I was a better friend to my friend, she wouldn't have set me up and ignored me when I was screaming and crying for help. And this environment that I grew up in, very, very closed-minded, narrow-minded, extreme evangelical Christianity. I learned so much when it came to people sharing their stories and how I played a part even in silencing others, minimizing others' stories, and invalidating others when they've experienced such levels of harm. And it took me experiencing that for myself to realize the harm that I've caused. And I ended up dropping out of college, that Bible college, that semester. It was difficult to show up to class, to be present, which was already a difficulty for me to deal with. And I ended up creating this whole new life, this whole new persona. And thankfully, over time, I have not been only able to acknowledge the harm that has been done to me through this religion, through this system, through my family, but I was also able to start taking accountability for the harm that I've caused others. I don't think people realize how these systems and how these stories go so unnoticed and not acknowledged on a large scale. Harm to any person, especially in that type of way, shouldn't be something that we dismiss, we take lightly, and that we silence. And I witnessed time and time again from not only my experience, but my experience within the church, how you can bring up these horrific situations of sexual assault, even involving children, and how these people in leadership have used their power to cover and silence these people. And a lot of these people tend to be women, children, queer people, Black, Indigenous, other people of color, disabled people. And I knew in some type of way in 2018 when I dropped out of college that I was leaving more than just this, than just this school, than just this bubble that I'm in. I am leaving this limited, harmful ideology behind me as well that has been used to oppress myself and to oppress the world around me. But yeah, I started my journey 7 years ago, and it's amazing how much I've developed and how much I've grown, not just numbers wise, but as a person. I don't think I would have the platform that I do in the ways that I do now if I stayed in that environment. I would be one of those creators, one of those influencers perpetuating that same harm, but in a larger scale. And I'm just so thankful, despite the unfortunate things and moments that have happened to me through my life, because I know that I've taken these things and I've used them to not only share my story, but to help truly uplift other people and their stories. But yeah, that's been my journey so far. It's a never-ending journey because I'm never ending. I'm not stopping my deconstructing. I'm not stopping my growing. And I know that people think that growing is such a linear experience, healing is such a linear experience, but With growing, not only comes learning and taking in this new information, it also comes with so much unlearning. And that's a part that a lot of people, including myself, can be challenged in. Takes a lot of working through shame and taking accountability for the harm that we cause. That's not an easy thing. Don't take that lightly. But if I'm expecting to hold my political leaders, these institutions, these systems accountable for the harms that they cause, I have to also hold myself accountable for the harm I've caused. And that's really, the journey that I've been on. And I just choose to share it online, with others, and hopefully that they can resonate and take tips and tricks and learn from the mistakes that I've made so they don't have to continue that harm in this world too.
And you know what we call that? We call that setting up future generations for success, rather than failing them and giving them the tools to continue on the oppression, right? And again, that generational trauma and the decolonization of everything, it obviously takes a lot to admit within ourselves that, hey, maybe I fucked up, but maybe it's time for me to correct that, because nobody's perfect. In the image of a human being, we all make mistakes. And I think owning our own mistakes and clearing our own doorstep before we try to clear somebody else's doorstep is definitely something that we can all do within ourselves, and recognize our own implicit bias, recognize our own, these just the marginalization of oppressed communities, like you said, like disabled and survivors of sexual and gender-based violence. Because oftentimes, whenever we hear, speaking of violence, oftentimes whenever we hear about a mass shooting, what's the one thing that we hear the most? We hear thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers, of course.
We hear thoughts and prayers every time a mass shooting happens. Students are going to school. Look at Uvalde. Look at the school shooting in Uvalde. Look at Parkland. Look at Sandy Hook. The Sandy Hook children would have graduated last year. They should have started college this year. Unfortunately, they did not. They told their parents goodbye for the very last time because they did not return home. And that is the reality. And these are the conversations that we need to be having. So, I thank you for literally grounding me and walking me through, your journey. Now, I would love to talk a little bit about decolonizing Christianity, because there's a lot to unpack here. Because Christianity has started, it's turned into like this distorted Christian faith and leading to the oppression of marginalized communities. It involves the critiquing of white supremacy, nationalism within Christianity, and how do we decolonize while we uplift the perspectives of Black, Indigenous, and other marginalized peoples? And then re-examine the actual relationship between Christianity and colonialism, slavery, and focus on like that inclusive faith. A lot of churches have really shifted a lot of their focuses to welcome everybody, even outside of their own faith, because they've turned these churches into these welcoming spaces. However, the religious trauma is still there. The generational trauma is still there. The colonization within the churches is still there. The hate, the oppression, and the marginalization continues to run rampant in churches. Whenever I think of that, I think of churches like Westboro Baptist Church, right here in my home, or right here in the state of Kansas, where I currently reside, that is literally blocks away from the Kansas State Capitol. I think about that. With them going and protesting at military funerals, they go and protest at LGBTQ pride parades, they go and protest for literally any little fucking reason. I have the highest respect for Megan. Damn it, I almost fucked up on her name. This is not going to get edited because I believe in the authentic voice. Megan Phelps Roper was essentially excommunicated from her own father's church, Fred Phelps. I met Fred Phelps at a Kansas City Pride Festival. I met him. He was there. That and coincidentally, that was the very first Pride Festival that I ever went to. And let me tell you about that interaction. Whenever you grow up in the age of social media and the age of technology, you see a lot of these things because the algorithms were like way different in 2011, 2012, and the algorithms way different. You were able to see the freedom of speech. You were able to see that before Meta decided to start censoring. Fred Phelps passed away in 2014. My first Pride Festival was in 2011. That was the beginning of the end for me, as I like to say, because that's when a lot of my journey truly began. But I honestly think if I never would have met Fred Phelps, if I never would have went to my first Pride Festival, never would have created that Facebook page, "Hey, I'm gay," my life would have been so different. And the one thing is, my mom has always accepted me, but society forced me to believe that I needed to change myself because how I was living was I was living in sin. And I thought to myself, going through conversion therapy, and I want to add a disclaimer, my mom never supported conversion therapy. She always loved me. She's always accepted me for who I am and for what I am. She's never questioned me. She may not understand it, but that doesn't mean that she judges me for that. My mom is the true definition of a warrior, the definition of a survivor, and the definition of how a human being is supposed to be. She was forced to go to church as a child. She did her own decolonization without even realizing it, without even understanding it. And like the deconstruction of religious trauma within ourselves, within our communities. But I just remember hearing Fred Phelps just holding the sign saying, "Homosex is a sin." I will never get that out of my head. Just seeing this old wrinkly bastard just standing there. Excuse my language, but this old wrinkly bastard is sitting here with "homosex is a sin." And I was taught that you're supposed to love your neighbor. That includes your immigrant neighbor. That includes your transgender neighbor. That includes the people that look different than you. And to see this, I'm gonna say it again, this old wrinkly bastard standing here preaching against the very thing that he's trying to. Just like how can you live with yourself knowing that you are going and protesting at a military member's funeral, knowing that they gave up their fucking life to serve this godforsaken fucking country for this church to hide behind that freedom of religion? And hearing the Supreme Court rule that hate speech is free speech, what the fuck is wrong with you? Legitimate question. What is seriously wrong with you? But God forbid we take to the streets and protest gun violence because then we're seen as Antifa thugs.
Oh my gosh,
God forbid we call out what's happening right now. You know what I'm talking about. Me and my mom have been talking about it for the last, what, 2, almost 3 weeks. My mom is seeing it. I'm seeing it. She called it out on Facebook and, oh, we can't be talking about this person. I'm not going to mention the name on this podcast. We all know what I'm talking about and what I'm talking about. This person was not an elected official. This person was very hate-filled. I don't condone political violence. I don't condone or I don't support violence, period. But whenever you preach it, I'm a firm believer in karma. I am a firm believer in karma. Again, this is not getting edited. The point of this podcast, Julia, the point of our movement is to give the platform to people who do not reach those headlines. Where was Air Force 2 whenever the Sandy Hook children were slaughtered in their school?
That part.
Where was the outrage whenever Melissa and Mark Hortman, who was murdered in their own home and their dog Gilbert? Where was the fucking outrage? It was radio silence. Because they did
Literally.
not give a damn about her. She fought for marginalized communities. She fought for my mom's health care. Granted, it was in Minnesota. It does, whatever happens in a state does leave rippling effects in other states, believe it or not. I'm rambling at this point. I want to get back to you, but I felt that this is very it's a well-reciprocated space because you understand. You get it. A lot of people, unfortunately, do not. Millions of people do not because they are complicit in silence and they are allowing what is happening to happen right now in our very eyes. The country is crumbling. However, I have a little bit of hope because of people like you. I have a little bit of hope because of people like my mom who keeps me going, who's my literal inspiration behind everything that I do. This movement and this podcast is to honor people like my mom who have fought hard. But you know what? It's also for people like my friend Erin Gallagher, who actually wrote a book called Hype Women. Whenever you hear the word hype women or the words hype women, what do you think hype women means? And what does that mean to you to be a hype woman? What do you think?
I don't know. I'm very interested in finding out, though. A
So,
hype woman?
yeah, so hyping up women, so like a hype woman, right? Whenever we think about hyping up women, how are we hyping women? The one way we're doing it is giving them the voice, fighting for reproductive rights. Abortion access is healthcare. Healthcare is a human right, a basic human right,
Right.
especially to a survivor or to that 12-year-old that is hiding in her closet that doesn't have a choice right now because the Supreme Court said so. The overturning of Roe v. Wade literally set us back so many years. My question is, how much further are we willing to go back? Pretty soon, women will not have the right to vote. Pretty soon, women will be barefoot and pregnant in their kitchens, down on the farm. As my co-founder Gwen would say, she wrote a song called Barefoot and Pregnant that went viral in 2023. Feel free to stream it
Barefoot
on your
and
platforms.
pregnant.
Have you heard
Yes.
it?
Yeah, actually, you know. And down on the barn. I like that
Yes,
song.
and
Shout out to
she
her.
does it. Yes, she's my co-founder. And
Yes, yeah, I saw that. I love that.
she, I'm not into like her style of music. I'm gonna be fully blunt because you know she does like a little bit of like country
Sure.
style. She does a little bit of like, you know, these, she mixes like these genres. She's kind of like the Kelly Clarkson, right? Of like the new era. Because Kelly
Love
Clarkson is
that.
one of the only few artists that can actually, you know, dabble in different genres and it actually sounds good. Gwen is the prime example of that. And keep in mind, she is not a big time celebrity. She lives in Nashville, Tennessee, and she is an independent music artist. She's not signed to a major record label. She is literally just herself. And that is one thing that I admire about my good friend Gwen Levy of Gwen Levy and the Breakdown. Again, you can stream all of her music on all the streaming platforms. Barefoot and Pregnant has over 20 million views across all
Yes.
platforms. Whenever
Awesome.
you listen to Barefoot and Pregnant for the first time, what did you think? What was your reaction? And how did it make you feel?
Oh, that is so funny. I was laughing because I was just like, at first I was like, is this a satirical song or not? With today's, you know, climate of today's country, I couldn't tell at first if it was satirical, but then I was like listening to the lyrics more in detail and I saw the music video. And shout out to Gwen, you did a great job. I love that. And I think it's such a fun and playful way to talk about very serious issues. Like you said, earlier, when you were talking about, like, you know, the girl in the closet and stuff, and you know, not having a choice, she mentions, you know, something similar like that in the song. And I love the one line that she says at the end of the chorus. It's like, 9 out of 10 evangelicals would agree, let's leave her barefoot and pregnant, like the good Lord meant her to be. Something like that. But I love it because it is so true, and it is so just contradictory to I one because like it's as a person who, you know, was a part of the evangelical church and who had to read the whole Bible by third grade in order to graduate from this missionettes program. If you know what missionettes is, sending you love and healing, because geez, that is a lot. But being a part of these programs and stuff, and it's just like purity culture being so pushed on us, and just like hearing that line, 9 out of 10 evangelicals would agree. Oh, 100%. And when I grew up in evangelical Christianity, I believe the same thing. I believe to my deepest core that abortion was murder. How could we do that? How could we take this human life? And then now I'm here in 2025 with the awareness that I do have. It's like, you guys don't even treat real kids well here. You were mentioning all the shootings at Sandy Hook, Uvalde. Does it seem like we as a nation, as this so-called want-to-be Christian nationalist nation, genuinely care about children? Because it's pretty obvious that we don't. If we did, there would be gun control. If we cared about women, there would be access to Medicare and Medicaid when 40%, I believe, I forgot what article said, 40% of births are in this country are done with funding from Medicare and Medicaid. And it's just like, you guys aren't pro-life. One, you're nothing Christ-like, like talking about this administration and these MAGA people. Let's make it clear. You are nothing like Christ was like in the Bible. You do not exemplify his love and compassion towards marginalized people. Jesus Christ in the Bible was a man of liberation, and he was asexual, but no one wants to talk about that either. But it's amazing hearing, like, her song just kind of just in such playfully fun melodic way talk about such serious and vital issues that yes, these people would rather have us popping out babies and bringing them into a world where they're not going to get access to free food, they're not going to get protection while they go to school, they're not going to get support to explore their own belief system, forcing the Ten Commandments in school and Bibles. Like, this is just, it's so contradictory to Jesus. And yeah, I do enjoy her little song. Shout out to Gwen because that song's a bop. And I'm happy that there's just so many different ways that you can convey such important messages. And music is such a fun way to do that. And I try to do, similar things in my own personal life. And it just shows how powerful something like that reached over 20 million, views, streams, millions of people. That's huge. And I love seeing people have this creative outlet and using it like a real artist would to talk about the important issue. So, shout out to Gwen.
Whenever she listens to this episode, I can hear her in my head. She's probably going to call me and be like, "Oh my God, I did not know this was going to turn into be a hype episode for me." But honestly, I bring up her music because the first time that I heard about it, and the first time I heard it, and this is how I actually learned about Gwen. I was like, "Who the hell is Gwen Levy?" And I really quickly found out who Gwen Levy was because she messaged me on social media last year, and I thought the name sounded really familiar. And I was like, "Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute." So I went to Google, or went to YouTube because I saw that she's an independent artist, and I was like, "Wait a minute, she wrote Barefoot and Pregnant." And I looked at my mom. I was like, "Do you remember this song?" She said, "Yeah, I showed it to you." I said, "She's in my DMs right now." Like, excuse me? And then she's like, "I want to help you organize, and I want to help you." Gwen has literally been my right-hand person through this entire thing, and she's opened my eyes a lot to understanding like women's rights even further. But it's not just women's rights, because abortion is not just a women's issue. It's a reproductive rights issue, and it's just a human rights issue.
Agreed.
And it goes deeper than just abortion. It also goes to contraceptive access. It also goes to IUDs, as she says in her song as well. I remember watching a video of Gwen speak last year at the Tennessee State Capitol alongside Gloria Johnson and Afton Bain. I believe she'll correct me on that, but she was with like the Tennessee Three, as they're called. And there was a giant inflatable IUD that was at the State Capitol in Tennessee. Incredible speech. But all in all, I was like, is this song satire? Is this song real? And then I thought about it, like, you know what? This is our fucking reality. And here we are in 2025, and it rings even more true now than it ever did in 2023 and even beyond. And even before that, it rings true now, looking and seeing how far back the country's going. It's just insane to me. And it's like, how much are we going to allow to continue happening? But, you know, again, like I said, I do feel a little optimistic because of people like you, Julia, that literally give me hope on a daily basis. I literally go to your social media and just look for inspiration because I'm like, you know what? This gets really heavy. And my last question to you is, if you were to receive a DM message, you know, whatever the language is now, I'm showing my age here. I know it as an instant message. You know, I grew up on Yahoo Messenger, you know, like DM it or, you know, chatting
AOL.
on there. Oh God, AOL, that goddamn dial up. Speaking of which, did you know like earlier this year they just got rid of AOL dial up? Did you know
My
that?
God. I didn't know. I thought it was gone, honestly. I didn't
So did
realize.
I. You want to talk about a fucking dinosaur system? There used to
That's pretty
be a
wild.
point in time where I was not able to search the internet and my mom was on the phone at the same time. She would come in there and she'd be like, I need you to disconnect from the internet because I got to make a phone call to your grandmother. And I was like, oh, hell, here we go again. And then, you know, we started like upgrading the systems and it was like, wait a minute. I can be on the internet. She can talk to somebody at the same time. What?
Future.
You talk about like that mind fuck moment. That was definitely one of those mind fuck moments. Like, wait, we can actually, you know, I can go in here and I'm not going to tell you what I was watching, but
Or
shut up, mom. But
yeah, she's like, I already know.
she's like, we already know. I kind of walked in and watched it doing it. But anyway, again, this isn't getting edited. This is literally staying in here because I think
Love that.
people need to see the humor in these deep, dark subjects. And I oftentimes joke about my own trauma, and other people look at me like, oh my God. I'm like, I'm talking about myself here. I'm not making fun of somebody else. I'm making fun of myself because it's like, yeah, like I did some fucked up things. But at the same time, would I ever say those things about somebody else? No, because I know better. But I do joke about my own trauma because that's how I cope, or else I'm gonna be, well, you know, I honestly don't know. Because I have this humor bone and I have this humor side to me that I have a thing that if I speak to an audience and I don't make one person laugh, I fail at my job of delivering my message. My
Well, you got me laugh a
message.
few times.
I just, you know, thank you so much for, you know, coming on the podcast. But again, my last question, I kind of went on a rambly moment and I apologize to anybody who's listening. I ramble a lot. You'll get used to it. You'll learn to love it. Be sure to contribute to our Patreon as a member because without that, you know, we haven't fully launched it just yet, but it's getting ready to. We're across all social media channels. We're on Blue Sky. We're kind of on Twitter, not very much. And I think I have like 3 followers on there. We're on Instagram with 212,000 followers and we're on Threads. But and be sure to follow Julia as well. Julia, what's your social media handles? And then I'll ask you that last question. What's your social media handles?
So my Instagram is at Julia Official. It's JEWLIEAH Official. And then for TikTok, it's just at Julia and spelled the same way. I also have Twitter and Blue Sky as well. And I believe it's just the same username as well. But you can find that all in my link tree on my Instagram page.
Perfect. So, last question to you is how do you remain positive in a society that continues to repress? It's a very deep, loaded question.
For sure. Definitely. How do I remain
And
positive?
feel free to pause for a second and think about this because, and just listen to me ramble for a second while you're thinking about your answer. And we'll come
Yes.
back to that in just a second. But you know, whenever I realized that I wanted to do something, I wanted to organize and I wanted to give people a platform and give them a voice, I was thinking about people that again, do not reach those headlines. You know, we sat down and talked to a 1991 Jeffrey Epstein survivor, Jess Michaels. We also talked to Lindsay Boylan, who was the whistleblower against Andrew Cuomo, who was a disgraced former governor of New York. She was the whistleblower that came out against him for sexual harassment. Goes over on Mamdani. That's all I'm going to say. I'm watching that election like it's my religion, because we need progressive voices in positions of power to enhance and improve our lives, not to continue these oppressive states and this ginormous police state that we continue to live in.
Right. Agreed. I love that. And I love how you called him. I love how everyone calls Andrew Cuomo the disgraced governor of New York. That's probably one of my favorite little things. But yeah, I would say staying, positive and during all of this can be difficult at times, especially, people like you, like me, and many others of us watching this have experienced such difficult, traumatic moments in our lives. And at whatever level, at whatever capacity, and however much, it doesn't take away the fact that these things have impacted us in such a way. So remaining positive and hopeful is very hard, but things that have helped me tremendously is one, walking more in authenticity. There's this book that I read, and I think it's actually behind me. Yeah, it's like right behind me, and it's called The Intelligent Body. And I think it's by a psychologist named Kyle Davies. And overall, you take the good and the bad out of the book, but one of the things that I got really out of the book was how vital and important it is to know that there is a connection between the mind and body. As a person who's dealt with such harm and whatnot in various areas throughout my life, I've also experienced physical pain throughout my body. So just to give you an example, sometimes there's this like spot on my back that kind of becomes like inflamed in some way. I experienced some type of tension and pain. And over time, I started to notice that there was a correlation between the emotional and mental experiences I was having under, moments of stress and whatnot. And noticing now I'm having this tension in this area of my body that's kind of like lit up in a way. So one thing that has helped me to stay grounded and hopeful is tending more to my body. I do a lot of things like mindful movement, exercising, body work, and I do a lot more to tend to my body and kind of care for it in such a way and give it the movement and the intention that it's always needed, but I always neglect it because I had so many other things going on in my life that it just didn't seem like a priority. So one thing that helps me is connecting with my body. And since I've been doing that, I've been feeling this release. I've been feeling this tension in a sense like melt away in my body. So connecting to my body has helped me tremendously. Also connecting to community. That is one thing I constantly share with people in real life and on my platform. It is so important to start building community. And even though it's easier said than done, it's important to connect with very like-minded individuals. That doesn't mean only stay in this bubble, in this box, of people. You should expand and you should meet people out of, with different interests and whatnot. But I do think it's very vital to connect with people who do have similar goals of collective liberation, about amplifying marginalized voices, about helping those in need. I think that building community has helped me not only feel seen and validated and cared for, but it's helped me to also improve other skills in my life, like communication skills, like expanding myself and learning different things. I've been spending more time with my aunt earlier this year, and she taught me how to change a tire. I spent time with my family, and I ended up going on a trip with them sometime this summer. And I think showing up and having community with people but also making sure that we're showing up authentically when we come into this community. I know a lot of us have friends and we have some level of community, but a lot of us as people, we don't have that community with our authentic selves. We have it with the mask of whatever the other person is wanting to see from us or what we think they want to see from us. And over time, because of this radical self-love that I have built for myself over all these years, it's starting to show up. Not only do I love myself in the way I look, I've been able to love all aspects and all versions of myself that I've had throughout this life. And it feels like I've lived many different lives in this one life. This radical act of self-love and compassion towards myself, that helps me remain hopeful. Because if a person like me, like how I told you, I grew up half white, half Filipina, in an evangelical, closed-minded family. I am the daughter of a pastor, but I'm also the granddaughter of a pastor. My family's a big reason why evangelical Christianity expanded in the Philippines as much as it has. And that's something that I don't take lightly. That's something that weighs heavy on me because I also know what has followed with that. I would say just this ability to truly love myself, all aspects of myself, all versions of myself, through all phases of myself, has helped me and helped me bring hope. Because if a person as bigoted as I was, as colorist as I was, as fat phobic as I was, as misogynist as it was, and as homophobic as I was, as a person who's a plus size mixed Filipina first generation pansexual woman, I had very bigoted views against all these things that I naturally embodied. So I feel like coming to this radical love for ourselves and loving ourselves and being able to confront ourselves, that has brought me hope. Because if a person like me can change, develop, grow, learn, and unlearn, and prune away the harmful thoughts and ideologies I was taught, and take accountability and move forward and create a space for other people to feel loved, comfortable, and truly receive equality and basic human decency, I believe that anyone can do that. And that's just one thing I really try to communicate through the people in my life, but also through my platform. These are the types of things that give me hope, is truly knowing myself and seeing myself through all the phases I've been in. Because that right there has been the fuel to help me move forward. It's helped me to develop my platform to what it is. And I believe it's a space where we can come as we are and we can all learn, heal, and grow together. And yeah, those are certain things that just bring me hope. It's just true connection with self, community, and my body. But I'm very interested to hear what helps you though, Zach. What helps you stay hopeful during, such a difficult time in this world, and with the work that you do, and while balancing everything that you do, I'm very interested on what helps you make it through.
You want me to be completely honest? People like you that literally speak the truth to power. That is what keeps me going. But do you want two book recommendations? Because I'm going to tell you right now. So if you're a reader, I have two really good books that I'm getting ready to do a deep dive into. One of them was the Erin Gallagher book that I was telling you about, and it's called Hype Women: Breaking Free from Mean Girls, Patriarchy, and Systems Silencing You. The foreword is done by no other than Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh my gosh, that's impressive.
Yes, feminist herself. And then the other one is the least re-traumatizing read on childhood sexual abuse for survivors by a survivor. It is called Healing Honestly: The Messy and Magnificent Path to Overcoming Self-Blame and Self-Shame by Alyssa Zapersky. I really hope I said that last name right. I apologize if I did not, but
love that.
This is the healing, honestly, is a candid and often funny survivor to survivor guide to navigating the untrue stories and victim blaming narratives that survivors of child sex abuse hear every single day. This takes a lot of power to write, you know, and I'm deeply excited to do a deep dive into these and learn about, you know, the inspiration behind these books, because coincidentally, I'm interviewing both of these authors very soon. They will be in future episodes of this podcast, as well as many, many, many other people, which you can listen to this podcast on all the major streaming platforms. And with that, Julia, is there anything else you'd like to share with anybody out there who's listening, or just any word of advice to anybody? Anything you want to share?
I love that. And I appreciate you for sharing those recommendations too, because I'd love to check it out, especially that last one that you just named. I feel like that's something that a lot of people, including myself, can really benefit and feel seen and heard and validated in. So I appreciate those recommendations. But last notes to leave with, if there's anything I would love for people to get out of this podcast episode is, one, your voice is vital. I say vital all the time because a vital is the best word I can use for you to stress to people how important your voice and your story is. It is not meant to stay hidden. It is meant to be shared. Sharing and storytelling is one of the most amazing ways that we connect with one another as human beings. So your voice is vital, but also loving yourself. That is so contradictory, it seems, to the way that many of us grew up. And I was actually having a conversation with that with my friend earlier, how self-love was deemed to be such a negative thing in the religious context that we grew up in. But I promise you, you invest in yourself, you connect to your true self, your most authentic self in the rawest way, it will start to truly better impact your lives. It takes time. It takes a lot of, you know, support even, and a lot of compassion, radical compassion for yourself. But I believe that the way that we treat ourselves and how we view ourselves really shows on how we treat and view the world and the world around us. So I would just want to encourage anyone, tune into self, know your voice is vital, and very grateful that you are here. You as in Zach, but also you as whoever is watching this, the world is a better place with you in it. And you may think that you are not making a positive impact if, you know, you think that you're just, I'm just reposting someone's story, or I'm just donating, or I'm just, you know, show. All of these things are so important. All of us are playing a part in helping break down this oppressive system that has been used to harm all of us. Each part that we play, each role, whether it be a podcast, whether it be songwriting, whether it be speaking, books, whatever it may be, it is vital because you are vital. You are important. And yeah, fuck fascism. That's probably, you can blur that out.
No, you know, I don't think I'm going to. I think it's absolutely true. And I think, yeah, you know, again, thank you so much for coming on the Rights of Justice Movement podcast. You know, you have an open invite. Anytime you have anything to share, any updates, any follow-ups, anything like that, you know, you have an open invite anytime that you would like to. Julia, thank you so much for being a bright light in such a dark world. I appreciate you beyond belief. I know our followers are going to love you. They're going to embrace you because they lift us up on a daily basis. So I know that they will do the same thing to you. And with that, again, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I appreciate you, and you have a fantastic day and have the day that you absolutely deserve.
Thank you so much, Zach. And same to you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. Very grateful and blessed. And I'm excited to connect again in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Yay!